Hello and welcome to another edition of the Best of Mornings with Matt White right here on 1170 SEN. On Monday, Greg Alexander joined Matty in studio to review the thrilling second week of the NRL Finals.
Time for the Monday Means Test with Greg Alexander.
Thanks to UPIN Property, dream it, find it, UPIN it. Brandy is with us as we get down to the final four. Morning, Brandy. Your reactions from the weekend and what a difference a couple of games makes. One with lots of points and the other as tight as we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, incredible weekend of footy, Matty. And down to two games. It felt strange yesterday being at home on a Sunday for the first time this year. Well, since the season kicked off back in March. It's business time, all right. And it was two different games. The first game, the Sea Eagles, was much like what we've seen a lot of games this year, where it was very lopsided. The Sea Eagles jumped out to a start, much like the Melbourne Storm against the Sea Eagles the previous week, where the game was basically over after 15 minutes. And that was the case on Friday night when Trbojevic, Foran and Cherry Evans had scored tries inside 15 minutes. So game was done. Roosters just didn't have the firepower to mount any sort of comeback. But what a game it was Saturday night. Brutal, intense. I was concerned about Penrith's chances going in, and I'm a worrier. So, I just liked what Parramatta had done the previous week. I know it was against Newcastle, but they had individuals in, they were doing things that they didn't do all season. Mitch Moses ran the ball more than I'd seen him run all season. Their front row rig and Campbell Gillard returned for that clash against Newcastle. So I was concerned, and I knew it would be a close game. I didn't expect what we got, but because it was in a season, Matty, where we've had point scoring records smashed, both individually and team records, we had a game that only had two tries scored, two tries from kicks. It was 8-6 at half time, and that was the score at full time. I can't remember a game. I know we've had a couple of low scoring games, but these games that were low scoring through the year didn't hold a candle to what happened on Saturday night. It was a game where only two tries were scored, but so much happened. There's so many storylines out of that game, whether it was controversy, whether it was just the brutal defence, whether it was try-saving tackles, whether it was the kicking game of both the halves who just launched aerial raids against the back three. They kicked their teams out of trouble. It was an incredible game.
It was an amazing game of rugby league, and it looked as though it was going to take off there with about 10 minutes to go. And then, there were more twists and turns for that final 10 minutes as well. In terms of the Manly versus Roosters game on Friday night, like we say, chalk and cheese completely, and the amount of points that were scored there was just incredible. 48 points overall on the Roosters season is done. I said just there in the opening piece that it was an almost merciful end. I mean, Roosters fans won't like the sound of that, but given the season they've had, Brandy, the Roosters should be extremely proud of what they've achieved.
Yeah, look, and you don't want to... When Luke Keary was hurt back in, I think it was round three, it was early in the season when they played South, he went down with that knee injury. When he went down, you thought, well, I don't know if the Roosters can win the comp without Luke Keary. Because of the young, inexperienced halves that they already had, they'd parted ways with Kyle Flanagan. So the halfback that was the halfback for most of the year, the previous, he was gone. Then Luke Keary went down, such a important member of that team. So right from that moment, I think most people went, well, the Roosters, no, they can be there around the mark, but I can't see them winning the comp without Luke Keary because of the young halves. Sam Walker was untried and 18, hadn't played any footy the previous year. Then they had Lachie Lamb and Drew Hutchison as maybe, players that could fill in, but... Yeah, so what they were able to do just without Luke Keary, I thought, was pretty impressive. But, if you throw in the retirements of Boyd Cordner and Jake Friend, Brett Morris, the injuries to Lindsay Collins, a raft of injuries. When I went through their lineup, Matty, coming into the Manly game, they had 10 10 out that would have been starters, 10 starters out of that side. So, yeah, they did a great job to get where they did, but with Manly controlling the footy, and Des always says it, it's about possession. Last week they completed 21 sets. This week, that was against the Melbourne Storm. This week they got through 31 sets. And the difference is you bring your good players into the game. Melbourne didn't allow them to get into the game because Manly made so many errors and the Storm controlled the footy. This time, Manly, the Roosters got off to the poor start. Manly played a lot of footy in the opening 15 minutes inside the Roosters' territory and were able to come up with three tries. And the game was done and dusted there.
Incredible. If you were Melbourne or if you were the Rabbitohs, who do you think's had a more comfortable weekend watching what's unfolded for their prospective opponents this weekend?
Well, I'm sure the Storm sat back and thought, wow, look at these blokes. They're bashing the hell out of each other. You know, they might be a few down by the time they get to us and finish the 80 minutes. So I'm sure the Storm, you know, that went through their minds. But then they would also be thinking, boy, these blokes are battle-hardened. Whoever gets through this, you know, and they're young bodies, so they recover pretty quickly. They would have been sore yesterday. They'll still be sore today. But, you know, by the time tomorrow runs around, these blokes are used to getting bashed. And they bash each other at training regularly. You know, I know we've spoken about this previously, Matty. What they do at training is chalk and cheese to what we used to do. I didn't make a tackle over the off season. These blokes hammer each other in opposed sessions, and they play footy weekly at training. That like full on contact sessions, so they're used to it. So even though it was, you know, it looked like it would gas them, they won't. They'll be ready to go Penrith by tomorrow. So I think South would have looked at Trbojevic tearing the Roosters apart and thought, well, you know, we need a good plan to stop him, and that plan will revolve around how well our middles play and how well we defend. Can we defend like we did against the Panthers? Because if they do, if the Bunnies can pull off another defensive performance like they did against the Panthers, Manly are in for one hell of a game.
Brandy, are getting some breaking news from Peter Bedell. Anthony Milford has been arrested by police. So this happened last night following an alleged assault. The Broncos were aware of the incident and have notified the integrity unit. So more details on that to come. Of course, Milford has signed with the Rabbitohs for the 2022 season. So we just had a text come through saying, I've just tuned in, what's happened with Milford? That is the scenario at the moment. So arrested by police last night following an alleged assault. The Broncos were aware of it. The NRL Integrity Unit is now aware of it. So we'll bring you up to speed on that as the morning progresses. We need to take a quick break after this. I'll get your grand final predictions. We need to find out what's happening with Michael Maguire, who steps in at the West Tigers if they are going to pull the trigger.
Tuesday, Canberra Raiders hooker Josh Hodgson spoke with Matt about the RLPA's new player advisory group, aimed at providing more clarity between the NRL and its players.
Some of the biggest issues in the game will be thrashed out tonight as the NRL players go in search of what they've been asking for this year, which is a seat at the table when the big decisions are going to be made. About a dozen members of the Players Advisory Group will hook up by video at 7 o'clock tonight with the Rugby League Players Association, and there are a whole host of talking points. The Raiders' Josh Hodgson is part of that group, and I'm pleased to say he joins me this morning. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how are you doing?
Good, thanks, mate. Look, there has been so much talk around the issues in the game that I think that this formation of the player advisory group is going to be a real positive step. How important is it for you as a playing group across the board to have a seat at the table?
Yeah, I think it's massively important. I think it's, you know, not just important for us as players. I think it's important for the game. I think they need us at the table. I think, you know, if you're going to discuss game decisions in terms of rule changes and how we're going to conduct ourselves as players on and off the field, judiciary issues, you know, all things like that, I think it's really important that you have the players' opinion. So, you know, when you make that decision, you've got the players' backing. So, you know, not only is that, you know, a good thing because you get player buy-in, but at the same time, if that decision doesn't go quite right, the liability lays on both of us too. So it's not just all aimed at the NRL all the time. And if you're going to make rule changes, if you're going to make all these decisions in the game, and you've got players backing in and players, you know, kind of coming up with these ideas too, I think it makes a lot more sense. And I think certainly, going forward, you want the people that are putting into practice these things that are, setting their own standards, as you try and do in your, in your own clubs with your own sets of values and rules that you have around the place. You set your own standards so you live up to your own values. And if you mess up, you trip yourself up because you alone will set the rules. I think it's really important that we have a playing group at the table.
Just before we get into some of the issues that you want to discuss at that table, let's be clear about what you're doing. So this is an advisory group formed by, a dozen players that will sit within the Rugby League Players Association, and then all that would, I would assume, go to the NRL when you sit down and have discussions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so obviously there's 12 or 13 players in the group, and from different clubs, obviously, and we all get messages and ideas from players that, throughout the year you kind of hear things, whether it be certain issues that pop up throughout the year that players are concerned about, and we have our meetings where we bring up certain issues, and if it's a common theme across most clubs, then it's something that we probably dive a little bit more into, and then we come up with a few key issues that we think is really important going forward, and put that obviously towards the board and towards the NRL. So I think it's a really good way of doing it. I think having a players group to speak on behalf of the players is just a lot more powerful than one player stepping up and saying this is what we reckon as players. I think it's you hear stories all the time about the commission coming together and the commission talking about rule changes and having ideas and spitballing things, and it seems like a really powerful message because there's a lot of people obviously putting a lot of thought into their ideas, and that's the same same thing with us. There's a lot of people that care about the game, and I think the good thing is sometimes this can be portrayed as the players are spewing or the players are throwing up a fuss and it's the players against the NRL. That's certainly not the case. We all absolutely love this game, and we just want to see it at the table to make the game as best as it can possibly be, as players and even within the playing group. You're not always going to have the same ideas and going to agree on the same ideas, but you're all coming from a good place where you want the game to be as big as it can and be as successful as it can. And I think having the players at the table in around those decisions is only going to be a good thing for that.
How will you attack the issue of consistency or, I guess, inconsistency around the season, around these rule changes, especially, Josh, with what happened at Magic Round?
Yeah, well, this is just my personal opinion. We've got a meeting, about this tonight. And my opinion is it's really hard to find consistency when you're changing things a lot. I heard Gus Gould talking on the Sunday Night Footy Show the other night, and I really agreed with him. I thought it's really hard on the referees because they have so many different decisions to go against. You see so many different rulings and so many different things they have to tick off on every try or every little tackle that could be, a penalty because someone gets a bit of pressure on the back of the neck, and you just can't tell with those situations whether that's a lot or whether that's, a little bit. That comes down to trust in terms of the players. And I think when you change things all the time, it's hard to get that consistency. You get consistency from practicing the same things over and over and over. And if you just throw things in there, especially mid-season, you're never going to get consistency. It's going to take time. So we need to, in my opinion, we need to, not change it up as much and have a lot more thought into when we're going to change it up. And, I pointed out the other day, we saw Magic Round was just ravaged and overshadowed by injuries and, by sin bins and red cards and suspensions and fines. And really, there was no need for it to be brought in at that kind of time of the year, in my opinion. I understand, it comes from a good place. There's no doubt about that. They're trying to look after us as players, and we really respect that. But we play a massively intense sport where you've got blokes sprinting at each other at, 20 plus k's an hour and stepping and trying to get through the line. It's a really technically difficult thing to do, to execute a tackle and not catch someone high. It's just going to happen sometimes. So, no one purposely goes out to take someone's head off. And, the instances that they do, it's blatantly obvious that they've done it. And, rightfully so, that's a yellow or a red or a big suspension or whatnot. But I think with a rule change, it's just put a lot of pressure on the, us as players and the referees as well, in particular, to keep that consistency. It's as I've just touched on, if you're changing things all the time, it's hard to get it right all the time. And there's that many different rules, getting brought in. You've got to keep an eye on everything.
I said at the time, Josh, that the Magic Round crackdown was kind of shock and awe. On reflection, do you think, from a player's perspective, would the tackles have been able to have come down with a directive without a crackdown?
Yeah, I do think it would have been able to come down without a crackdown, and probably not as high in terms of the players leaving the field. I think that was probably one of the bigger things. You know, put them on report and, you know, have a look at them during the week and discuss. You know, you've only just brought in, discuss these kind of things with the players, bring the players to a, you know, invite the players to a judiciary meeting where you're going to discuss, look, if this happens again, we understand this is the first week we brought this in, but if this happens again, here's an example of the future weeks. This is going to be a yellow, or this is going to be a red, or this is going to be, you know, a suspension for X amount of weeks. Explain that process over the, you know, a couple of games before it gets, you know, before it gets brought in, then at least you're aware of it building in. And as I said, it technically is a very difficult thing to get right, to especially if you're a bigger man, to hit a smaller man and make sure you don't catch him high when he's trying to, you know, bounce around all over the place and get past you. It's technically a very difficult thing. So it's something you've got to practice. It's not, you know, although rugby league players, it's something you've got to be, you know, you've got to be very good at, especially for those bigger blocks. So just little things like that, I think, you know, need a lot more thought process. And as you touched on, a lot of people obviously blowing up about inconsistencies, but, you know, I feel for the referees because it's hard for them. And I've been on the field when you get tough calls, but, you know, it's hard because we've got that many, you know, we've got that many things to look out for nowadays. It's hard for them to get it right all the time, and they're never going to when we're changing it, you know, kind of on the run.
And then also the judiciary and match review process this year has come under enormous microscope. Do you think those two are tied together, the consistency of the rule changes and what's been happening at the judiciary? And is that something that you'll look at with a pretty deep dive?
Yeah, that's another thing that we're going to, you know, talk about tonight. I think that's a, you know, another issue with the game that we need to, you know, really need to look into and have a, you know, a real clear judiciary process and what kind of looks like in terms of bans, suspensions, fines, all them kind of things. We need to have a real clear pathway. It's such a, you know, hit and miss in terms of what players are getting, what bans and what weeks. And sometimes it's, you know, it's based on injury outcome. Sometimes it's a really bad hit, but the bloke don't get injured, so you don't really get much of a fine. And then, you know, one that's probably not as bad, if he cops a bit of a whack and it's, you know, and he gets an injury, you can end up getting weeks and weeks on the sideline. If it's a bad hit, it's a bad hit. Injury outcome, in my opinion, to the, you know, should be on the wayside. It's, you know, as I just touched on a minute ago, no one's going to whack someone purposely to try and injure him. It's just a physical contact sport that we play, and you're trying to hit a bloke as hard as you can. It's one of them games where there's going to be accidents. And on the occasion where it's not an accident, then people will be dealt with appropriately. But I think, yeah, that clarification in the judiciary process and all that kind of thing is going to be on the cards tonight, as well as the obviously the NRLW for the women as well. It's been you know, a really tough year for those girls. You know, how much I love doing what I love for a living, and to you know, to put my thoughts in their position and be, I can only imagine it being a really tough year for them, especially to be found out, you know, pretty late on. It's not going to happen. And I'm sure they tried to get things going, but obviously I've not heard the girl side of things tonight, the women's side of things tonight. So once we hear that, then we'll have a bit of chat about that too.
Yeah, fantastic. So the women's and men's issues being addressed at the same table. And like you say, you know, there is a big concern around the NRLW, the way that it was cancelled, the communication or lack of, and the flow-on effect of that. So that'll be great to get all voices at that table. And just a final one, the fines off-field. So this is an interesting one, Josh, where obviously you guys are going to say, no way, 130K is way too much. And the NRL is saying, well, we're taking it up from 50K. Is it something that you go looking for middle ground, or is this a broader issue to have a discussion? Is it just about money, or is there a bigger discussion to have about it?
Well, I think, again, I've not probably spoke too much about this in the group. We'll have a meeting tonight, but in my personal opinion, it's you're a game with men that are based from 18, men and women that are based from 18 up until maybe 35, 36. You've got a lot of young men you know, playing our game, and were role models in our game, and are still finding, you know, they're not only finding the way in terms of being a professional rugby league player and what that looks like, but they're finding the ways in their own life as well. And just like any kind of job in the world, when you're a young man and you're trying to find your way in life, you're going to make mistakes along the way. And that's just going to happen. No matter how much you increase the fine, you can increase the fine to $1 million. I guarantee you someone's still going to make a bit of a stuff up for want of a better word. I don't think increasing fans is the way to go. I don't think anyone purposely goes out there to, as I just touched on in game, anyone purposely goes out there to make a mistake. We're all human. We all make mistakes. And I understand that, you know, some mistakes are worse than others, and some mistakes should be treated worse than others. 100%, I'm not, you know, that's not the case. That would be arguing. But just to be solely increasing fines to, you know, 130 grand and just presuming that's, you know, problem solved, job done, it's just not going to happen. I guarantee you're still going to have fines. And, you know, as I just touched on, we're all people at the end of the day, whether we're 18 or whether we're 32 or whether you're, you know, you're 50-year-old bloke, you still make mistakes. And that doesn't mean, I think, you know, whacking a fine up's going to stop that. So I don't think it's a reasonable thing to do.
Well, it's a smart move by the players, I think, to form this advisory group, sit down, thrash out some issues and try and get a seat at the big table, if you like, with the Rugby League Players Association and the NRL. And hopefully we can tick off some of the issues that we've discussed this morning. Josh, appreciate your time. Look forward to seeing what comes out of this meeting tonight and then further down the track.
No problem. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
On Wednesday, the Sydney Morning Herald's Andrew Webster joined Matty in studio to recap the West Tigers' backflip and retain their head coach, Michael Maguire.
So Madge has dodged a bullet. Have the West Tigers dodged one as a club?
I think it's the right call in the sense that they didn't have a logical replacement for him. I do have to say the way that this week has played out and the way things have played out the West Tigers for the last 6 months is not really befitting a properly run NRL club, and particularly one as popular as the West Tigers. Lee Hadjipantelis on the back of the Sydney Morning Herald today, a debacle, an embarrassment. I think that's the smartest thing that's come out of Lee Hadjipantelis' mouth for about 2 years, because the way that things have been handled in the, particularly the last couple of weeks, the way that everything that's gone wrong at the West Tigers has been funneled towards the coach, and the pressure that he's been under from the documentary to a chairman and a CEO that say that they have nothing to do with football, but then just talk ad nauseum like a stream of consciousness to whoever calls them about what's happening on the field at the club, and even talking about how players are playing at the club has not been helpful whatsoever. I noticed you made reference to what Brent Reed said in News Corp papers today about it's a stay of execution in many respects, because the way that they start next year is going to be very, very telling. Reed is right. 8 matches is usually the mark for when a coach has to perform by. And start of next year, Matty, we'll be talking about all this again, how Michael Maguire is under more pressure than any other coach. If they get rid of him, who are his replacements? That dialogue's going to be there straight away. But I think the fans get this. The fans of the West Tigers get this more than anyone. The problem at that club is not Michael Maguire. It's the people around him, and it's the people above him. But it has been a funky 24 hours, because he went from apparently a board meeting that didn't happen where he was gone to a 90-minute Zoom meeting with the football committee that saved his job. So he's still standing, but he's on shaky ground.
When a club has this situation with a coach and they're either trying to work out to keep him or get rid of him, it's never pretty, is it, Webby? You've seen this time and time again. But this scenario, as you've just pointed out, was so clunky. How did the club get it so wrong?
I think by just the fact that they leaked so much to the press. Like, I've read and heard numerous reports in the last year that Michael Maguire was gone. Now, that doesn't come from an assumption from a journalist making it up. That comes from somewhere within the club. And people can sit there and roll their eyes and say, you know, you filthy journos, you just cause drama for the sake of it. It comes from somewhere. And I find this with both the joint ventures, because the Dragons are the same. In good times, it's all rainbows and unicorns and everything's fine. But when in bad times, the joint leaks like a leaky boat, a sieve, leaky pipe. You know, there is dissatisfaction somewhere, for sure. Now, I know Jimmy Smith, our SEN colleague, has floated that it was actually leaked out to try and snuff out the mole, who who's been leaking to certain journalists about certain things, and that's why there was such a discrepancy between him being sacked and him surviving. But I think Lee Hatchinventeles shows it himself. He says, like, there was a 90-minute Zoom call that saved the coach from getting sacked. Lee says today in the Herald that it's been really disappointing the way that so much of this has been played out in the media from the bloke who has played out so much of it in the media. Again, I think it's hilarious that he says today that neither he nor the CEO, Justin Pascoe, are responsible for football matters. The last time I looked, it's a football club. Your core business is football and winning games of football. Could you imagine someone like Nick Politis, the chairman of the Roosters, saying, oh, okay, we've got the wooden spoon the last couple of years. Oh, we finished down the bottom of the ladder. That's got nothing to do with me. I'm just the chairman. Doesn't work like that. That's not how those roles work. But I think my other read on it, Maddie, is that there were certain people at the top of the tree there at the West Tigers that wanted Michael Maguire gone, but when it came to the crunch, they didn't have the numbers. Now, that to me says that that's a club that's split right down the middle. And I think they're the bigger problems for the West Tigers than Michael Maguire.
And they could well be problems that resurface next year. And to your point earlier, if it's a slow start to next year, every single loss that they have next year, whether it's one in the first eight or two in the first eight or three in the first eight, every single loss is going to be under the microscope. Ivan on the text line, I don't think it's clear. He says, how much did the payout have to do with their decision? Ivan says here 800,000, but the figure was around 750. How much do you think that had to do with this decision?
Look, I know the chairman has said that money wasn't an issue in whether Michael Maguire stayed or went. 750 in the current climate is a pretty big payout for a club, particularly when West Ashfield, which a part of the joint venture, have had no customers coming through the door for 3 months. So I think it was a factor, but I think just as much as anything, it must be that the fact that they didn't have a suitable replacement. And, I think there was numerous reasons why he survived, but that would surely be one of them.
Where does this leave, then, Michael Maguire? As a seasoned coach, as somebody who appears to have had to beg for his job to stay in it on a 90-minute Zoom call, who's now going to have to lose, according to the reports, his right-hand man, his football manager, his high-performance chief is going to have to play a different role. He's going to have to work out how to repair the disconnect between the footy club or the footy department and the club. How much of Michael Maguire today is a different coach, Webby, to what he was yesterday?
Well, remains to be seen, doesn't it, next year. Can Michael Maguire change? I think something similar happened when he was at the West Tigers, whether he would change his full-on approach to coaching, and he couldn't at South, and he ended up costing him his job. Whether he can do that at the West Tigers, just how much of an influence Tim Sheens is going to have on him, his former Canberra coach, and whether just changing assistant coaches is going to change the way that Madge operates, they're the big questions early next year. They don't have a hell of a lot coming in terms of recruitment. I know they've got plenty of money to spend in the salary cap. The problem is no one wants to go to the West Tigers. I don't think Tarek Sims or Adam Elliott is going to be the answer. I know Jackson Hastings is coming back from Super League next year. I'm not sure whether he's the answer. I do feel like the blame will shift in some respects from Michael Maguire to Tim Sheens. I think Tim is an outstanding operator. He's an even better man. He's one of my favourite people in rugby league, and I've got to know him quite well over the last 10 to 20 years. But Sheensy is 70, and he's been out of the NRL for the best part of 10 years. And he's gone from a floating role, quote-unquote, to now the head of football, and if things don't turn dramatically next year, how long before the pressure is put on Tim Sheens? I see Lee Hatchinventeles has said today that there's a real whiff of 2005 about this current squad. Really? Where? I don't know what he's smelling, but I'm not really getting the feeling that I'm not getting the vibe that it's a 2005-like feeling at the West Tigers at the moment. So I just hope that it works out for everyone's sake at the Tigers, not least Tim Sheens and not least Michael Maguire. But they've got a long way to go.
Can I ask you one more just on the Tigers situation and the Tales of Tiger Town, the documentary? I had a bit to say on this the other week, and I thought it was a great doco, and I think, you know, kudos to all of those who are involved in it. But I posed the question, did anybody at the Tigers think about the downside of that? What happens if the season goes wrong and you expose yourself to that kind of opening and also expose your coach? How much do you think that may have played a little bit of what we're seeing at the back end here, aside from the results? I'm talking probably on the emotional level.
It was background noise they didn't need in a really tough season. It's no secret that Michael Maguire didn't want it to happen. I don't know any right-minded coach that would want it to happen during that point of the season. I like the club to tell us how much they got paid by Fox Sports for it, and whether the exposure was worth it. And to me, the fact that it happened, look, I agree, I thought it was fascinating. It was a bit of a slow-moving car crash there in the end, and I felt really, really sorry for Michael Maguire. The way that he was portrayed in many respects as this lunatic just yelling at his players, and then them looking like dead cows in a snowstorm, just staring at him blankly, not knowing, not responding at all. It got tough to watch there in the end. He got painted as a bit of a gibber, imagine. I felt quite sorry for him, and I know a lot of people close to him felt the same. But to me, it shows that it's a club that doesn't have its priorities in order. You know, don't worry about whether it brought in money, but it was like from a marketing perspective, and that's Justin Pascoe's background. It was a commercial decision, not a football decision, and I'm sure West Tigers fans, while it was all nice to have the insight into what happens behind the walls of the dressing room, I'm pretty sure they would have preferred wins. And for a coach under siege, for a team under siege, it was another distraction that they didn't need in the down the stretch of the season when they needed wins and they had a coach coaching for his survival.
I think it was another question that they didn't ask themselves before they went headfirst into the bright lights and shiny silver screen. And I think it didn't work out the way that they all thought that it would. How many dead cows have you seen in snowstorms?
Plenty. I felt like I felt like one.
And Thursday, SEN 11:16 breakfast host and Melbourne Demons legend Gary Lyon previewed this weekend's AFL Grand Final.
Let's take you across to WA, where SEN 11:16's brekkie host Gary Lyon, of course, Melbourne Demons Hall of Famer, is counting down, like a lot of us, to the AFL Grand Final over in Perth. He's on the line this morning. Morning, Gary. Thanks for your time, mate.
Matty, good morning to you. Counting down indeed. Been a long wait. Been here for 4 weeks now, two of them in beautiful quarantine. And with the bye between the prelim and the grand final, it's been a bit strange, but only two sleeps away now. So it's getting very real.
How did you go in quarantine? I did a couple of weeks in Melbourne there going down to do the Paralympics coverage. And I got through the 2 weeks okay, but I've got to tell you, I wasn't stuck in a box, so to speak, like just your regulation hotel room. But I could imagine that another day would have tipped me over the edge.
Yeah, it's not something you'd recommend. We're in an apartment and had a balcony, so we're able to get a little exercise machine in there, which kept me busy during the day. And I was still doing the radio program back to Melbourne, so I was still getting up at 2:30. in the morning and doing that and having the day finish at 7. So it left me a fairly long day to try and fill in. But we got through and it was worth it. I got out on the Friday morning of the preliminary final when Melbourne played Geelong and had an unbelievable result that night. So it made it all worthwhile.
You make a good point too about the bye. You know, it hasn't been that way, but we've had that week off leading into the grand final. Everything's different, mate. You're over there in WA. We don't have the regulation MCG grand final for the second year in a row. So everything's different. But how different has it been without that footy the week before the GF?
Yeah, no, it's been really strange, Matty. It really has. It's I suppose we're just getting used to dealing with all sorts of different scenarios that have popped up in the past couple of years. And, you know, you just deal with it. The players have dealt with it. The clubs have dealt with it. The AFL have dealt with it magnificently. So us, and from a media point of view, you just, you know, there's no alternative. And the supporters are probably the ones that have found it hardest. You know, the two teams, the Bulldogs and the Demon supporters, are coming off, you know, magnificent preliminary final victories. They would have all wanted to ride that motor, that wave of momentum straight into the following weekend, but it wasn't to be. You know, last weekend was a bit strange. It's probably the TAB and the Sportsbet account might have been given a workout with the racing, but as you say, you know, the games in Western Australia, how much more different can it be? So we just deal with it. And it's, you know, the build-up's been superb here. It's 26, 27 degrees set for Saturday, and twilight, 5:15. It'll be absolutely superb.
An incredible stadium too. I think it's going to be a massive show. So let's put your Melbourne Demons hat on. As I mentioned, a Hall of Famer at that club. You were captain there for a long time, more than 200 games for the club. But it's been a long time, mate, since the D's have won a premiership. You've got to go back to 1964. So how are you feeling personally as the nerves start to build and we get towards Saturday?
I feel okay, to be honest. I haven't been much of an observer of footy since I retired, because, you know, I went straight into commentating and working, you know, the game. So there's only a very rare occasion, probably in the last 20 years, where I've been able to go along and just sit in the grandstand and watch Melbourne play. So I'm not a bad watcher. This obviously feels different, and I'm sure by, you know, Saturday, I had quite a bit of stuff that, you know, was coming my way to do. There's not many Victorians over here, Matt, so that, you know, I want you to do a lot of things. And in the end, I just said, listen, come the grand final day, I don't want to do anything. I just want to be able to get to the ground, get in my seat, and watch all the stuff unfold, and hopefully, from our Melbourne point of view, cheer them home to victory.
Which would be incredible for you, because you'd be out there presenting the Premiership Cup. I mean, that's an amazing thing to think of. You don't want to dream too big and you don't want to look too far ahead, but that's an incredible, incredible honour.
No, yeah, no, it is. It really is. And I'm absolutely aware of how lucky I am, A, to be here because of circumstances and more worthy people back in Melbourne, but unfortunately they can't be here. So Chris Grant has been given that honour from a Western Bulldogs point of view, who I'm a huge fan and admirer of, and we played some state footy together, so that makes it even more special. So one of us will be smiling, but it is, you know, it's a great thrill, and I've had a great response from former players and my old teammates and fans, and my family are excited, so that's just a little bit indulgent. We'll carry it out, and then hopefully we're able to hand it over at the end.
Yeah, mate, well-deserved, obviously. So congratulations on that honour. I hope it plays out your way. So just quickly, how do you think this match plays out against the Bulldogs? They've only had a couple of times managed to take the flag. What was it, 2016, the last time for them? So how do you think this one plays out? The two most dominant teams have ended up in the grand final.
Yeah, they have. They're 1-2 for most of the year. The Bulldogs had a slip-up, you know, at the end of the year. They lost their last three games, slipped outside the top four, gave up the double chance, found themselves travelling on the road to all parts of the country. So their performance to get here is just absolutely full of merit. Their best footy's breathtaking. They made a mess of Port Adelaide in the preliminary final a couple of weeks ago. And Melbourne have been in great form all year. They only lost four games. They've been consistent. Their two finals, you know, you couldn't have hoped for any better. They dismissed Brisbane and then smashed Geelong. They're fit. They're rock hard fit. Both teams have got no excuses, and that's the best thing about it. They've got almost their best teams to choose from, and I'm confident Melbourne's best can win it. But then there's lots of variables in all of that, so it's not one of those ones where you get ahead of yourself by any stretch. You know, you've got great competition, but this is their best chance for 57 years, Matt, and it's exciting to be able to sit there and watch it all unfold.
Yeah, a couple of days of hard yakka still ahead of you, so I hope you get through those okay, mate, and sit back and enjoy that grand final as a spectator on Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, our time. Thanks for your time this morning.
Good on you, mate. No problem at all.
On you, Gary. Gary Lyon there, Melbourne Demons Hall of Famer. He was their captain from 1991 through to 97, and like I said, played more than 200 games, 220-plus games for the club, and an out-and-out legend. Wouldn't that be something to be able to present the Premiership trophy, the cup, to your team if they can salute on Saturday. So 2016, the last time that the Bulldogs won it. They beat the Sydney Swans that year. They've only won it twice in their history, 1954, the time before that. And as Gary said, it's been a long, long time for the Melbourne Demons. 57 years, in fact, their last premiership in 1964. So we'll have the Melbourne Demons versus the Bulldogs in the AFL Grand Final. You can catch Gary and Tim Watson via the SEN app on breakfast, SEN 1116. So really easy to find, great show to listen to. And they've got everything covered, especially in the world of AFL.
Thanks for listening to another edition of The Best of Mornings with Matt White. We'll be back from Monday morning at 9 a.m.